And this is Coast Community Radio, KMUN KTCB, Astoria Kilimook, 91.9 FM and 89.5 FM. And we're swimming on the worldwide web stream during this week, starting of the Pineapple Express. Good morning, my name is Michael McCusker. Well, as you probably know, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And it is also this year the 35th anniversary of the Clatsop County Women's Crisis Service. Leanne Jones Kelly is the founder of the Clatsop County Women's Crisis Service, which afterward was the Women's Resource Center and now the Harbor. Her account of the early history of the crisis service was written to commemorate the crisis service's 25th anniversary 10 years ago in October 2004. And I'm going to read it now. Women in Crisis by Leanne Jones Kelly. I have been asked to give a personal history of the beginning of the Clatsop County Women's Crisis Service. I think it began with me in the early new year 1978. As memory is now fairly distant, some dates may be wrong, and some people's names, if not faces, are hidden in the mist of living a very busy life the last quarter century. The story is remembered by me, and the two persons closest to me at the time goes like this. The best and dearest friend I ever had was murdered by her husband in the late fall 1977. Several months later, another friend was raped by an acquaintance. I was experiencing violence in my own marriage, and the news on national television was about an Oregon woman named Greta Rideout, who had charged her husband John with marital rape. The question on all the talk shows and local stations was, can a married woman be raped by her husband? I felt rage and powerlessness at the violence directed towards women and could not imagine that it could ever be different. I was watching a talk show on Portland TV with Jim Bosley and Marjorie Ballou, I think that's her name. They were discussing this issue and interviewing a woman named Norma Joyce. She was the administrator of a place in Salem called the Women's Crisis Service. I had never heard of such a thing, and as soon as I could reach Ms. Joyce, I implored her to give me all the information about her program. She suggested that she come to Astoria and meet with me. We spent 2 days together, and she left me with several books, printouts, and a training. At about that time, I read that a small group of women professionals from Clatsop Community College had received a grant for a women's resource center and had rented a tiny office space. Within a day or two of meeting with Ms. Joyce, I went to the Women's Resource Center office to see what they had there. These women were into meditation, alternative healing, and feminist theory. They did not have anything there for rape or domestic violence. So I went home, got a typewriter, the books and materials that Ms. Joyce had left with me, and a telephone, and returned to the Women's Resource Center. I walked in and announced that I was there to provide services for women who were victims of violence, and how about I just use this desk right here? Can you imagine the gall? Whatever was I thinking? I was in a fever of righteous indignation about what I saw as a huge social injustice and with a fire in my belly to make it my life's work to right that wrong. Needless to say, I was not viewed as welcome as flowers in May. I seem to remember pointing out to the women there that the grant was for services to Clatsop County women, not just for only them and their friends, and they retreated to a far corner, whispering among themselves and looking at me with dark eyes. Sometime during the next few weeks, I realized that I was the only one left in the office and settled in for the duration. It never occurred to me that I was being pushy. Looking back, I cringe with embarrassment to recall how I must have appeared to everyone who came in touch with me in those months and years. I was a zealot and something like a force of nature not to be denied. I read every book, magazine, contacted every person, gleaned every drop of information I could about women and their lives in history, law, society, culture, church, home, and politics I could find. Every day I hungered for new information and knowledge. All that information put more fuel on my fire. I got a job at a nearby bar as a bartender to pay for the books and other supplies I needed and started spending all my time at the center. I brought my daughter Jody with me to Astoria from Napa. She attended school at Star of the Sea. I started pressuring the newspapers in Astoria, Seaside, and Cannon Beach to do features on domestic violence and rape and began advertising for volunteers for the Women's Crisis Service. The first group had 12 women. I applied for a nonprofit status 501(c)(3), and as soon as we received it, I applied for a grant for $1,200 to buy a machine which would answer our phone and transfer the caller to a third party. Nowadays, that service is a part of your telephone bill, but back then it was real high tech and would enable us to have 24-hour coverage with people taking calls at their home. We got the grant and the phone, and suddenly we seemed real. We still did not have a board of directors, and I continued to be the bow of the ship, charting those choppy and suspicious waters where domestic violence still did not have any credibility or social recognition. I put together a big map of the area from St. Helens to Tillamook on the office wall. We started sticking pins with colored heads into places we had assisted, responded to, or received crisis calls from. Soon we saw clusters of red pins, blue pins, yellow pins, and after 2 years we had small forests of pins in each area of the map. This simple method formed the basis of numbers of women who had asked for services. We used the pins and the numbers they represented to apply for more grants. We used them to obtain statistics to lobby the Oregon legislature for laws prohibiting violence against women. We won every battle in those years and sponsored, lobbied for, and won not only our bills, the marriage license tax was the first of those bills, but also the first bill to protect elders from abuse, neglect, and exploitation. But that all came later. I was approached one hot spring day in 1979 by some women who walked into the office about attending a conference in Ashland, Oregon. They said it was for women working in shelters and other crisis services. I did not even know that there were other shelters around the state. There were only 4 that I can remember now, and a few crisis lines. The conference was the shock of a lifetime to me. I had never met any feminists before, let alone political feminists. These women were awesome. I was so confused. I recall that at one point the conference leader had all the women there, about 150, sit cross-legged in a big circle and do a deep breathing exercise where you sit straight up, close your eyes, and breathe through your vagina. I looked around between my closed eyelids to see if anyone else did not know how to breathe through their vagina. It appeared to me that I was the only woman there who was even shocked to hear that word out loud, much less attempt to breathe through it. By the time the 2 days were over, I was bonded forever to the vision of sisterhood, women's full political and legal rights, and protection from violence and oppression guaranteed by law and enforced by the courts. As the conference was winding down, an announcement was made for anyone who was interested in forming a group of programs in Oregon could stay and talk about it. As the sun set that day, 7 of us were left. We had a fire in a pit, a bottle or two of wine. I had a map of Oregon in my car, and using an eyebrow pencil from my purse, the 7 of us crudely drew out the areas we were from and called them our regions. I had the map and the eyebrow pencil, which is why Clatsop County is Region 1. As fate would have it, the regions were almost exactly the 7 geographical areas of Oregon. We each committed to meet in a different region for the next year every 6 to 8 weeks, and the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic Violence, OCADV, was born that night. The word, sexual, was inserted much later. I served on the board of directors until 1982. In a way, even though that was a mispronunciation, it was a sword. Over the next 2 years, Clatsop County Women's Crisis Service continued to recruit and train volunteers, many of whom were victims of domestic abuse, have fundraisers, do many public speaking engagements of from 2 to 100 people, anybody who would listen, respond to police calls about battered women, frantic calls from women running away from abusive situations, all the while fending off heavy criticism from the religious right and angry husbands who claimed that we were the cause of decline of the family and the American way of life. Also, during that time, OCADV, the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic Violence, became a very savvy board of directors, writing and winning a proposal to bring VISTA volunteers to each region to help organize on the ground. This was the very first VISTA grant of its kind, and it served as a pilot for other states. Several of us who had been taking other jobs to support our programs got VISTA positions. I was one of the lucky ones. Along about the second year, OCADV was able to write a grant and get a part-time director. Also in that winter of 1981, when Ronald Reagan came into the White House, the first National Coalition Against Domestic Violence conference was held in Washington, D.C. I attended as a representative from Region 10, U.S., which was Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Nevada, California, Alaska, and Hawaii. I was gratified to find that Oregon was nationally recognized to be one of the most progressive, organized, and effective states in the United States for programs for violence against women. When the Washington conference ended, I went to Coos Bay, Oregon, to organize a domestic abuse program because everyone who had been sent there had been scared off. My daughter, Jody, went with me, and she can tell stories about some of our experiences there. She knew how to talk to scared children who had just seen a bloody battle in their home and could keep a cool head in situations that no mom should ever be dragging her kids into. But those years, she was with me pretty much all of the time. She has turned out to be a wonderful mother, daughter, and friend. Back in Astoria, Vicki Swanson Garmo took my place as a VISTA at the bow of the ship of Women's Crisis Service and held it together as well as she could. But times were changing. As the program became more mainstream, there was more pressure to have professionals, and that's a quote, in leadership positions. Jody and I stayed in Coos Bay for about a year, then returned to Astoria. I came back to a faltering program in the realization that I was fried, burned out, flamed out, and downright beat, tired, and ready to rest. It seemed that the need for a spearhead and single director was gone with the maturity of the program. Based upon that, I took the job back for only a few months, asked for support from the professional community, and with help from volunteers, a board of directors was formed. Committed women, and also a few men, stabilized the crisis service, and the rest is history. After being advised for several years to get a college degree, I finally started attending Clatsop Community College in the fall term of 1983. I used school as a form of grief therapy after my oldest son, Darren, was killed by a hit-and-run driver in June that year. Eventually, I went on to get an MSW in June 1991, LCSW in June 1994, and worked in counseling from then until the present. Last year, and remember this was 10 years ago she wrote this, I worked, so that would have been 2003. In 2003, I worked for Alaska for the Fairbanks Native Association in the Ralph Perdue Alcohol and Drug Treatment Program to get a CADC. I'm not quite sure what all that alphabet soup is. There are many stories to tell about those beginning years in Astoria and Coos Bay with the Oregon and National Coalitions Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. Those years changed my life and the lives of many others since that time. Like the widening rings from a stone in water, maybe my friend Janet's death at the hands of her husband, the rapes of Greta Rideout and others closer to me, and my own destructive life, fed the fire of my anger and others, and we collectively said, no more. And that's written in caps. I have not written here about the love and support Deborah Cooper and Vicki Swanson Garmo gave my daughter Jody and me during those years, how they both shaped and supported me because only they can really understand what we shared and the sisters it made of us. But quite simply, I don't think it could ever have happened without them and all the women who volunteered and stepped into the breach when one or another would falter. I wish I could give their names, but time has passed, and remember just a few other than Deborah and Vicki would leave out too many whose names have fled my leaking memory cells. I am sure that I did a good thing then, a thing of my heart. I am also sure there are those who will remember me as a real pain in the behind. Perhaps if one charges into battle, there are those who will follow, those who will watch, and those who will try to shoot you down. I hope that the spirit of social justice, fairness, and support of our sisters is still alive and well in River City. And that was Women in Crisis by Lee Ann Jones Kelly. And she is currently living with her daughter, Jody, and two grandchildren in Napa. And she wrote this 10 years ago in 2004 to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Crisis Service, which more or less officially began in 1979. And now I'd like to read something by Laura Snyder, Violence Against Women. I have permission to go to the shore. He smashed my head into the radiator until it bled. He tied me up and twisted me like a pretzel. I'm pregnant, and he threw me down on the floor. This is not the script for a made-for-TV movie, nor is it a sensational portrayal of the myth, and that's in quotes, of violence in the home. These and countless other stories were all told to me during my work days at the Women's Crisis Service. And then when Laura wrote this, the Clatsop County Women's Resource Center, and now, of course, the Harbor. In your neighborhood, someone is beaten on a regular basis by her intimate partner. Maybe you've heard those muffled shouts, maybe even called the police. In your neighborhood, a child is being sexually abused. A quarter of the women in your workplace were raped as adults or as children. If you are a school teacher, you are working with children who live with violence. Did you know? Police officers in Astoria estimate that 60% of reported simple, meaning misdemeanor, assaults here are domestic in nature. In Clatsop County, the rate of known child abuse is double the state average, and per capita alcohol consumption is second only to Lincoln County. The Oregon Criminal Justice Council reports that the county with the highest total reported crime rate was Clatsop. Clatsop also ranked number one in behavioral crimes and ranked above the state average in person crimes. Domestic and social assault and abuse account for most person crimes in Clatsop County. People most commonly ask why women stay in abusive relationships. They stay out of fear. Most women who are killed by their partners are killed in the process of leaving the relationship. Economic dependence, having nowhere to move to, and the inability to act on their behalfs and low self-esteem that are one result of being battered repeatedly. People most rarely ask why men batter, intimidate, and in 1,500 instances per year in the U.S., kill the women they claim to love. Myth. Women's behavior provokes beatings. Fact. No one can make another human being hurt them. Most people blame the victim of battering for the crime, sometimes without realizing it. They expect the woman to stop the violence and analyze her motivations for not leaving, rather than scrutinizing why the batterer keeps beating her and why the community allows it. Until responsibility for acts of violence is placed on the perpetrators, we all suffer. Battering is a learned behavior. Children who are witnesses to violence often grow up to be abusive to their partners and children. 85% of men who batter were abused or witnessed assaults on their mothers. Somewhere along the line, batterers have learned that violence is a way to gain power and maintain control over their intimate partners and children. And somehow our culture has taught itself that power and control is an end. Depressing, Yes. But there is hope for change, and it comes with the establishment of a coordinated community response, which has succeeded in San Diego, Minneapolis, the state of Kentucky, and an increasing number of locales where service providers are determined to stem the tide of family violence and mandate the accountability of abusers. Task forces, including domestic and sexual violence victims, advocates, law enforcement, and prosecutors, created policies and procedures that would deter further abuse, decrease the number of repeat calls to the same address, and that would not re-victimize the victims of domestic violence. This work has successfully changed the focus in domestic violence cases from the victim to the abuser by replacing the age-old question, "Why does she stay?" with, "How can we stop him from hitting her?" The Domestic Violence Unit of the City Attorney's Office in San Diego has become expert in prosecuting domestic assault cases without involvement from the victim, who is often intimidated, threatened, or scared by her abuser out of cooperating with police and prosecutors. Prosecutors obtain over 2,000 convictions per year without the victim's testimony. The Domestic Violence Unit of the San Diego Police Department has implemented a pro-arrest policy mandating long-term treatment for batterers or substantial jail time, with priority placed on the safety of the victims and their children. If it took a lifetime to learn the use of violence to control another person, it will not be undone with a fine or a few years in jail. Officers and detectives on this unit are trained extensively in the dynamics of domestic violence and confront their own assumptions, biases, and privileges, which might hinder their effectiveness in the field. In 1 year, preliminary violence reports from police increased by 60%. There is great potential here in Clatsop County to create effective policy that works while fostering trust and partnership among committed people in all facets of service to victims and their children. It is time to move forward as a community. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Take time to think about your own neighborhood, your own workplace. The epidemic of family violence raging across the United States is happening in your own backyard. Tell a friend or a neighbor in an abusive situation that she has a right to be safe. Find out how to help her become safe. Demand accountability for abusers. Get involved. Be aware from this October forward. And that was Violence Against Women by Laura Snyder. She was community service coordinator for the Clatsop County Women's Crisis Service when she wrote this article in 1994 for the North Coast Times-Eagle. She was proprietor of Lucy's Books in Astoria for 13 years until selling it in 2011. She served a term on the Astoria School Board. She was also a triathlete until contracting breast cancer in 2012. She wrote about her experience with cancer for the Daily Astorian, which appeared last Thursday, October 2, 2014. You can find it on the Daily Astorian website or a back issue at the newspaper office. And it's a very good piece. I recommend looking it up. And now something I wrote. And I guess I'll give the disclaimer that it's my opinion, or perhaps my opinion only, and all the world, but I don't think so, and the cosmos, but I don't think so. I call it Beating Her Up, and I start with a quote from my friend, my deceased late friend Arthur Honeyman. Bravely, she confides her victory over despair due to brutish acts inflicted on her body and soul. Ah, how golden is the triumph of the spirit of splendid survival. And that was part of a poem he wrote many years ago. Beating Her Up. And I wrote this in 1980 for my newspaper, the North Coast Times-Eagle. The woman had been beaten by her husband. He raped her also, then tore up the house. Now he was in jail, and she was afraid of what he would do to her when he was released. She called the Clatsop County Women's Crisis Service in Astoria. She was told that a man had no legal right to hurt his wife and that she could press charges against him. There were other problems. Her husband's parents had the children and refused to give them up to her. She was also addicted to Valium. That night she called the crisis service a second time and asked if anyone would take her to a hospital. She had attempted suicide with an overdose of Valium preceded by heavy drinking of alcohol. She was afraid her husband would kill her if she attempted to keep him in jail, she told the woman from the crisis service, who drove her to the emergency room. The woman from the crisis service said she would accompany her to the police station. She said it was important to fight back against her husband's brutality. She knew firsthand about domestic violence, the crisis service woman said. She had herself been a battered wife. Most of the women who volunteer for the crisis service have been victims of domestic violence. Like a majority of the women they attempt to help, it was initially difficult to break off with the men who beat them. Like the woman who attempted suicide, they were afraid of their husbands or lovers. They understand when callers continue to stay with the men who beat them. Some have called more than once. The woman who overdosed on Valium was too frightened to press charges against her husband. After assuring her that she was safe from her husband, the police released him just before she signed a statement that would have kept him in jail. "He was big," the woman from the crisis service said. "I shrank in a corner. He looked just like the guy who used to beat me up." The frightened wife left the police station with her husband. The woman from the crisis service thinks he moved her out of town. "A typical case," she said. "A woman held hostage, her children the weapon used to imprison her. If she did not break away from the pattern of violence and pain, her next attempt at suicide might succeed, or she might die from drug addiction. It was not unlikely that she would be killed by her husband." The crisis service was established in October 1979 to help break the pattern. Most of what the women who volunteer do is provide referral services such as medical and legal help. They also set up sanctuaries when needed. They are often at risk. Some have been threatened by husbands or lovers of women they assist. They are severely criticized by men who are alarmed by the feminist movement and the growing determination of women to protect themselves at a time when the violence against them has increased. Each call received by the crisis service is logged. The information is confidential and the daily reports do not identify the callers. Here are some examples picked at random and scrambled somewhat to protect the identities of the victims. Woman taken to hospital, badly beaten by husband of 5 months. Battered wife moved out of home, needs shelter where he cannot find her. Woman needs shelter, harassed by ex-husband, bringing children with her. Woman on the run, talked fast, will arrive for shelter in 1 hour, afraid of husband. Niece called, uncle threatening her aunt. Husband charged with kidnapping, tried to take children. Woman with 4 kids. His husband beat her severely, threatened her and kids with gun. Police called, took gun and husband. Woman asking for shelter if she decides to leave. Boyfriend of rape victim asks what he can do to help her. She is withdrawn, unable to respond physically. He wants some reading material on rape. Woman married 9 months, husband an alcoholic. She lost first husband and oldest daughter in a fire several years ago. Younger children ordered to in-laws by court. Present alcoholic husband shouts at her after drinking every night. She is very nervous, needs company. Husband brandished gun at wife and girlfriend. He took kids and left. She wants to file assault charges, wants names of attorneys. Woman called in regard to 13-year-old daughter who's having problems after a short stay with dad, who lives in another city. Woman says her husband's father, a drinker and batterer. Woman's boyfriend tried to strangle her. She also has head injuries. Woman beaten by husband, put in shelter. Woman afraid of motorcycle club, wants shelter. Woman choked by husband, held her on bed, threatened her with gun. Woman's husband jealous of her job and friends, poured gas all over bedroom, himself and wife, threatened to burn. Unemployed husband tries to kill wife, shot arrows at her, smothered her, slapped and beat her. Boyfriend beats woman, kicks her out of house. She stays one night in shelter, waiting for emergency money from family in another state. Woman trapped at home in terror for several days. Husband slaps her, spits and urinates on her, pulls her hair and threatens to kill her. Woman forced into sex, put in shelter. The list of abuse seems unending. More women are assaulted by men, and the more women attempt to defend themselves, the more brutal are the men who assault them. The times do not favor gentleness. The hardening of the nation makes life more dangerous for women. The women of the Clatsop County Crisis Service struggle along, often disillusioned, often in despair. The calls come in. And that was something I wrote, beating her up. And it appeared in the North Coast Times-Eagle in 1980. And also Leanne's story appeared in the, I think it was the 2003 issue, April, North Coast Times-Eagle. And this has been Michael McCusker.